And on today's When You See Crickcast, Stephen Rader and I are looking at the lights in Lincoln Park. Ooh, the zoo lights are on. And we are talking about who we think should be the host for the Oscars. Yes, it's almost Oscar season. Oscar, Oscar, Oscar. I have the person that I think has been gravely overlooked to host this year. Who do you think it is? And on the show, oh, she's a sexy lady from down under, a true Aussie bisexual that is an amazing singer and songwriter, Missy Higgins on the Queercast, plus a down-home favorite. It was a film made right here, and it's the new queer show that they're calling High School Musical Goes Gay, and Hedwig and the Angry Inch better move over because there's a new gay musical in town. We're talking about We're the World Mine, and Richard Knight Jr. has your review, plus lots going on in the news. Ugh, they try to wrap it all up by the end of the year with a nice little bow.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
We are talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
I'm Stephen Rader.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queercast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming.
American Airlines. Offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
Queercast show number 271. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Stephen Rader.
Stephen Rader. Do you know Missy Higgins, who's on our show today?
No, I don't.
She's really fantastic. If you watch any television, you've probably heard her music. She's been featured on Grey's Anatomy and one of the CSIs and The Hills, which the kids all love.
Hills,
you know,
is the stupidest show on the face of the earth.
But they buy a lot of music, so.
Well,
she's Australian and bisexual and fabulously
bisexual,
cute.
Bisexual, men and boys.
Yeah, and so we love
her. Oh, my
God. And she's on our show all the way from Australia.
You've not watched
Australia. Did you see Australia?
No, I didn't.
I didn't see it either, but I like
Australia. Oh, my, speaking about Australia,
yes.
We can't let them win. We won't. the dumbest thing in the world, I eat it up like crazy. But you know he's hosting the Oscars, right?
Hugh Jackman?
Hugh Jackman.
Is he really?
Yes. Wolverine.
He would be good, actually.
Wolverine. I think not.
Oh, you think
not? No. I want a comedian. I want Billy Crystal. I saw Hugh.
I want Ellen DeGeneres.
Well,
where's the lesbian
factor
you're
a lesbian.
Again? That's... No, but because she's fantastic at those award shows.
Yeah. She's already got the time to talk shows.
That's true.
But Bonnie Hunt's show is quite good, too.
Well, there you go.
But the Hugh Jackman. I think we should have a comedian.
You don't like Hugh Jackman?
I like him.
I think he's
a little boring to host the Oscars.
But did you see him when he was on the Tony Awards when he was playing
Boring.
Did you think so?
Boring. And Billy Crystal had to come up and, like, do the first 5 minutes. That was it 2007, 2006?
I don't remember.
Yeah, and, like, did the first 5 minutes or something with him, and I was like, that was the best part of the whole show. And
yeah.
Then Hugh won an Emmy for hosting, but he really should have won an Emmy. They should have given it to Billy Crystal. I don't know. I'm a little...
You're a little miffed.
Any man that can't take a one-man or one-armed push-up from Jack Palance and turn it into gold like Billy Crystal did...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, that whole year of the Oscars.
Yeah.
Jack Palance just bungee jumped off the Empire State Building. Like, that was the best ever. I want John Stewart back. I love me some John Stewart.
Do you? I like John Stewart. I didn't think he was great hosting the awards.
See, John Stewart is the guy that is the Johnny Carson. He's the middle of the road guy.
Yeah.
He gets out there, he does his job, and gets the hell out of the way.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. Because, you know, you're sitting there going, look, I don't need your sketch.
Yep.
I want to get to who's going to win Best Picture. Yep. Let's just get, that's what we're there for.
Yeah.
The homosexuals, anyway. Like, the straight people, I guess, you know.
I think they should have Kat Deely do it from So You Think You Can Dance. That's who I think should do it. She's a fantastic host. And why she was not nominated for Best Reality Show Host.
So
and
you
Entertainment
you
Weekly
dance.
Agrees with me.
Do
she's British. She's charming. You've never watched So You Think You Can Dance?
I don't watch the dance shows.
Okay, wait. I don't watch the dance shows either. But So You Think You Can Dance are really talented young people who are more talented in their right foot, pun intended, than any American idol has ever been. I mean, I can sing as well as most of the American Idols. You know, I just don't have the backing and the
producers. The only American Idol that there is Kelly Clarkson. That's ours.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, she's great. The original. But I'm saying...
And Kelly Pickler.
I'm just saying that Kat Deely is so good on that show. She is so willing to go wherever she needs to go. She seems fresh. She seems like the gays would love her, the straights would love her, the old people would love her, the young ones want to do her.
Yeah.
I mean, she is perfect.
So you want to do her. You want to do her. That's
no, I really don't, but
yes,
she says,
you do.
She says, let's go to our judges. I love it. I am going to tie you up. This will not be a sex fantasy, though. I will invite Mitchell over because Mitchell and I both love Kat Deely.
Oh,
and So You Think You Can Dance. And we're going to tie you up.
I'll be tied up and Mitchell will be there.
Yes.
I ain't going to be watching no TV.
And we're going to make you watch hot, beautiful men dance. There are hot, beautiful young men dancing.
You have no idea how many erections will come and go.
Yes,
come and go.
I can handle it.
I'm sure that you can.
I can handle it.
It's like my friends would go, do you want to come over and watch the Bears game? And I'm like, you know, if I'm going to be around men who are wearing Lycra and jock straps, I don't want them playing football. You know what I'm saying? I know what I want them to do, and it's not... ball. There's going to be balls.
What would you want them to do?
Oh, honey, if there'd be balls on that little chain, they'd right up Happy Land.
But I'm saying,
no, I don't want to play football. Well, foot, no. Okay, I've never done that.
So you were, oh.
I love that you just got it.
No, I was pondering. I was thinking, you've never done that? That's what I was actually thinking.
I've never done that. I've seen many things on many, many video screens.
There you go.
But, oh, honey, those Asians. Mm.
So, You were saying, we were just talking before we started recording about how much we love Carrie Fisher.
This new book, the Carrie Fisher book, Wishful Drinking. I can't wait. I'm one of her biggest fans. I think she's just genius. And if you've never read, like, The Best Awful, the book, Both Quotes from the Edge, Delusions of Grandma. I mean, there's some really brilliant
writing.
And
she picks a great title.
She always has. Like, what made me laugh, knowing that her husband, her second husband, had left her, and that Suzanne Vail, the character in
Postcards,
that's the character she writes about again in The Best Awful. And Suzanne Vail's second husband also leaves her for another man. It's obviously her life. But the first chapter then is called The Man That Got The Man That Got Away.
The Man That Got The Man That Got Away.
Just howled when I read
it. Is she like the funniest thing ever?
She's
now. Are you asking Santa for this?
I'm asking my gay brother because I think a gay brother should buy a gay brother a Carrie Fisher book.
Hey, that's a really good idea.
I think that just says it all.
I
think it says it all.
Wait,
I can't wait.
Do you loan books? Because I want to read it after you.
Oh, I do. I sometimes don't get them back, but
I
love them.
You know where I live. So.
No, I do. I think she's and I watch her on all of her. My favorite thing she's ever said is when she was on The Craig Ferguson Show. If you're not watching Craig Ferguson, that's the only late night show to watch.
Yeah.
He's brilliant, and I'm sure that he makes up his monologues like right on the spot. It's just genius.
Yeah.
But he was on there, and he asked...
Just like Kat Deely.
Oh,
you
Jesus
would like
Christ.
Her.
Well, there you
Craig
are.
Ferguson
Craig
and
Kat.
And Kat.
Craig and Kat in the
because
morning.
They're both like, he's Scottish and she's British.
She,
and
I tell
fabulous.
You that, Craig Ferguson, I just want to bend him over. I think he's so amazing. I think funny people are sexy.
Yes.
Other people, no one has ever looked at me and said, you're really funny. Lay down, you hot bitch. No one's ever
Mitchell
said
fainted
that.
Last night, but you weren't here.
Well, thank you, Mitchell. So, he asked Carrie, Craig asked Carrie Fisher to explain the whole thing with her parents, you know, with Eddie Fisher. And so she's like, you know, my father, of course, was Eddie Fisher and was married to my mother, of course, Debbie Reynolds. And Elizabeth Taylor's husband dies in a tragic plane crash. And so she said, so my father began to console Elizabeth with his penis. And Craig Ferguson just fell out. And she, of course, says, well, you know, you can say it with flowers, or... There you go. That is why I love Carrie Fisher.
Oh, my God. So look at beautiful Linkin Park.
I know, it's
We're,
gorgeous.
Like, driving and the zoo lights are on.
So then I was like, turn that shit off.
Oh, my God.
Jesus Christ.
So funny.
My child.
Hey, folks, if you haven't seen The Seafarer at Steppenwolf, Stephen and I highly recommend it.
Go.
And there's lots more going on in the theater world. Plus, we've got a big review of We're the World Mine that Richard Knight Jr. is doing. And this is such a movie I cannot wait to go and see. I'm going to see it this week. Gotta. If you're in Chicago, it's at the Music Box. And... Wow.
It was filmed in here. Zac Efron's in it.
No, but he's cuter than Zac Efron, the lead.
Cuter than Zac Efron?
Oh, yeah. We're going to put the War of the World Mine trailer on our blog, and then you can see and hear the little music.
Really?
That my friend
Will
Jessica...
Will you put a naked picture of Zac Efron on the blog?
You could put one.
Those shower pictures. Remember those?
I don't, but you could get those
Honey, I
for
get
us.
Everything.
Hook us up. All right, we're gonna go to the theatrics of the show, and then we'll be back.
Woohoo!
More bling than the Gold Coast. More satisfying than a Chicago-style pizza. Monty Python Spamalot has it all. And now, the funniest show in the world has one more bright side. Richard Chamberlain. There will be just 2 weeks of silliness, only 13 days of bliss, a mere 16 chances to join Richard Chamberlain as King Arthur. As this laugh-out-loud, sensational symposium of silliness comes to the Auditorium Theater. So don't miss it, or we may never come back. We're very sensitive. Spamalot at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, January 20th to February 1st. Tickets are on sale now. Visit BroadwayInChicago.com today to see Richard Chamberlain and Monty Python's Spamalot.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of December 15th, 2008, you are in Chicago Culture Club. Don't miss the hilarious comedy, Don't Dress for Dinner, starring Bird Notice star Jeffrey Donovan and Patricia Callenber, formerly of TV Sisters, playing now at the Royal George Theater. For tickets to Don't Dress for Dinner, go online at don'tdressfordinner.com.
Meet Edith and Little Edie Beale, Jackie O's most scandalous relatives, in the Tony Award-winning smash hit musical Grey Gardens, starring Hollis Resnick. This fall's most anticipated production follows the pair's fall from high society into the squalor of their infamous East Hampton home. Grey Gardens is playing through December 28th. For more, visit northlight.org.
Signal Ensemble Theater continues its sixth season with 6 Degrees of Separation, running now until December 20th at Wicker Park's Chopin Theater. A comic tragedy, 6 Degrees of Separation follows a young homeless man creating a web of confusion and tragedy as he enters a family's life, exploring that everybody on this planet is separated by only 6 other people. Visit SignalEnsemble.com for more.
Remy Bumpo Theater Company presents The Marriage of Figaro, now playing through January 4th at the Greenhouse Theater. 5 stars, says Time Out Chicago, a top-to-bottom delight whose message is nestled in an abundance of screwball craft. Don't miss The Marriage of Figaro and a new adaptation. Visit RemyBumpo.org.
The Chicago holiday tradition is back. American Theater Company's celebrated ensemble lovingly presents It's a Wonderful Life, the radio play, adapted from the film by Frank Capra. It's the classic story as a period radio play complete with commercial breaks and live Foley sound effects. Playing now through December 28th. For tickets, visit atcweb.org. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr. with another Night at the Movies Mega Minute. We're the World Mine, the delightful queer musical reimagining of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, is opening in theaters across the country after playing film festivals to sold-out crowds since last March. The film is a joy to behold, the gay indie release of the year, a sort of queer-style high school musical with bits of the British indies Get Real and History Boys thrown in for good measure. The movie is the feature debut of Out director Tom Gustafson and his off-screen partner and co-writer Corky James Krukeberg. I hope I'm saying it right. Sorry, Corky, if I'm not. Kira Kelly, their cinematographer, Jessica Fogel, who wrote the music, which is an exuberant cross between Erasure, ABBA, and Scissor Sisters, and much of the cast. The story centers on the tousled, dark-haired, moody Timothy, I can't talk today either, played by Out actor Tanner Cohen, who is given to flights of dreaming, especially about the school jock Jonathan. Nathaniel David Becker plays him at the all-male prep school he attends. At the behest of his oddly poetic drama teacher, Miss Tebbett, Wendy Roby from Twin Peaks and The People Under the Stairs, Timothy auditions for a part in a musical version of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream and wins the role of Puck. As rehearsals commence, he discovers the recipe for a love potion tucked inside his script. Armed with a purple pansy flower, he's soon splashing the potion into the eyes of all the homophobes in town. Isn't that great? Ensuring that the first person they see and fall in love with will make them gay in the process. It's even greater. Naturally, a slew of complications ensue as the film builds towards its climax, the performance of the play by the all-male cast. The film has enormous charm, enhanced by winning performances from its two leads and made especially memorable by Roby's bewitching turn as the drama teacher, who seems to be an all-knowing fairy godmother to the other characters. Though the film was made, like most gay indies, on a minuscule budget, the production doesn't suffer for it, and Kelly's cinematography, particularly in the fantasy sequences, is gorgeous. One quibble. Throughout, at intermittent moments, the characters have burst into song, and though ostensibly a musical, the film really only features one full-out production number, and one once more of the incredibly infectious pop tunes Fogel has composed. The soundtrack helps to satisfy this craving to some degree, so get that immediately. It's on PS Classics. Were the World Mine, a film as winning as Were the World Mine, would reach well beyond its gay core audience into mainstream appeal, a fantasy that I've had about many other gay indies and with this movie may finally see realized. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and finally, that's the end of your Night at the Movies Mega Minute.
Hello, everybody. This is Cherry Jones, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Edible Underwear Maker.
Mr. Edible Underwear Maker.
Your true genius combined two of man's favorite things, panties and food.
I can taste it now.
They're a snack. They're underwear. They're a snack and underwear. Brilliant.
Two treats in one.
Gorgeous grape. Rock my world raspberry. Bodacious banana.
26 flavors.
And nothing says I want you like a man with a mouthful of underpants.
I want you, baby.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Edible Underwear Maker. Because thanks to you, when it comes to panties, extra large means extra yummy.
Yummy.
Beer at Isobu, St. Louis, Missouri.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. The 13-member New Jersey Civil Union Review Commission unanimously recommended to Governor John Corzine and the state legislature that they pass a law that allows same-sex marriage as soon as possible. The commission includes GLBT leaders, clergy, government officials, and a pro-life Republican. A spokesperson for Corzine said that the governor would sign a measure that legalizes same-sex marriage.
Cleveland now has a domestic partner registry. Council members approved the measure 13-7 on December 8th, making Cleveland the third city in Ohio, besides Toledo and Cleveland Heights, to have such a registry.
In New York, Dwayne Lange has been charged with lying about his HIV test results so a woman would have unprotected sex with him. Lange could spend up to 8 years in prison for reckless endangerment and possession of a forged document.
Florida Representative Bob Allen has lost his most recent appeal a year after being arrested for offering a policeman $20 to perform oral sex on him.
you get arrested, $20, that's pretty cheap, right? After being convicted, Allen claimed that he offered money to avoid being mugged.
New York caterer Carl Butcho is accused of charging $361,000 on his ex-boyfriend's card without the ex's permission. However, Butcho's attorney has said that the ex, Jason Warner of Ernst & Young, signed off on the credit card receipts. Before splitting, the couple lived at the Ritz-Carlton, where Butcho apparently told staff he was heir to a large fortune.
The group Truth Wins Out took out a full-page ad in the Salt Lake Tribune criticizing another ad that accused gays of mob violence regarding the Prop 8 protests. The previous week, the conservative Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty took out a full-page ad in the New York Times with the headline, "No Mob Veto," that condemned any attacks on people of faith. Various Mormon and other church leaders signed the ad.
In Vancouver, British Columbia, Chris Hiller and his boyfriend were the subjects of yet another anti-gay attack in the normally gay-friendly Davie neighborhood. Just 2 months ago, an attacker in the same area broke Jordan Smith's jaw while he and another man walked down the street holding hands.
In Brazil, officials said that a police officer may be a serial killer of 13 gay men in a suburb of Sao Paulo. The killings took place between February 2007 and August 2008 at the popular gay meeting spot, Petrias Park.
In Iraq, journalist Adel Hussein has been freed after being arrested for writing an article about homosexuality. Hussein was convicted of public indecency by writing an article about sodomy, but has been pardoned by the president of the self-ruled Kurdish region.
Matthew Rice, gay brother Kevin on TV's Brothers and Sisters, ended up with a black eye after defying a horse riding ban from his bosses. The Welsh actor said that he had to explain the energy to his Disney bosses. Rice suffered the injury while filming his own show in which he learns to be a cowboy.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
So, during the holiday time, do you have traditions? Do you have things that you like to do? That just made Di very happy. Are there things that you like to do?
That I like to do? Well, you know what? I'm going to go back to Dollywood, as I've said in the last episode. I'm going to be going to Dollywood to see my friend and his performance, which will be great.
Yep. Nothing like Dollywood at Christmas time.
Truly.
It is. And Christmas slung up in the hair.
It's the lights, honey. It's the lights. Oh. And what I love about it is that...
It's my favorite tree in the city of Chicago. I just thought I should tell you.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Isn't that gorgeous? There's two little trees right
there. Gorgeous.
If you're wondering where I'm pointing to, it's on the lake at Fullerton, getting on Lakeshore Drive.
Yes, right there.
There's two trees and they're lit up. Sorry.
For those gay boys listening, it's right beside the cruisy bathroom.
There you go. It's good to have a lesbian and a gay man on the show, so you get everybody's perspective.
Yes, she's looking for the crafty beaver, and I'm telling you where the cruisy bathrooms are. So, So we go to the Bollywood, and I always go with my brother and my mother, and my brother could not care less. He can't stand it. And then they know that they have to kind of get me out of there, because if they want to leave, say they want to leave at 5.
Yep.
They have to start getting me out of the park at like 3.
Yep.
Because by the time I hit, because you leave Dollywood and there's the huge, you know, souvenir shop that you have to go through to leave. I'm in there for an hour at least.
Looking at the new Dolly shop.
I buy them hats and everything. I'm buying out the store.
Will you buy me a little Dolly
song? Oh, of course.
All right, buy me a little Dolly song.
It's the same with me when I go to Paula Deen's restaurant.
Oh.
P.S. There's a Paula Deen video on YouTube of Paula Deen, and I'm not making this up, she's with some chick I don't know, and she takes a Krispy Kreme donut.
Yes.
Glazed, puts a hamburger patty that she's just cooked on top of it, then she puts a fried egg.
Okay.
Two pieces of bacon, and then another Krispy Kreme donut on top, and eats it like a sandwich. I'm not making it up.
Ooh, let's make one of those and see what it tastes like.
This is why you have to be with a Southerner when you tell the story, because everyone else goes, God, that sounds horrible.
No, let's make it.
I think it sounds brilliant.
Although, you know what I would do instead?
What?
I'd make it a piece of sausage. Not have me a sausage patty. I don't want no hamburger patty. I'm not even some sirloin. Even ground chuck wouldn't be very good.
Makes it
because then the grease of the ground chuck would get mixed with the grease of the Krispy Kreme. But the grease of the sausage just kind of would ooze into that egg real nicely.
Oh, honey.
You know I'm Southern.
I could. My mother has been known to wreck a car when it says hot and ready now.
Maybe
I mean,
a little
hot donuts now.
Oh, man.
It's just, if you haven't had a Krispy Kreme, and if you have and you don't like them, then you're an idiot.
And it, well, if you haven't had one coming out of the thing, machine.
Oh my God.
Because see, that was what I used to do on my dates in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Just go to the Krispy Kreme with the lights on?
Go to the Krispy Kreme with my high school boyfriend, Kurt, and we would go get a dozen. When you bought a dozen, you got a dozen for half price.
See, but you buy a dozen, and you have to buy another dozen, because you're going to eat the dozen
on the way
home.
Well, we would eat in the car, almost the entire dozen, and then we'd take the two boxes, and we'd divide it, and we'd take them home to our families.
Of course.
So they didn't mind how late we stayed out.
I went with my mother. When I first went here, I went back home for something. We were driving and saw the Krispy Kreme line. We had to go. So it wasn't actually on. No. But there's a drive-thru. And I'm like, there's a drive-thru at Krispy Kreme? Shut up. So we go through the drive-thru.
They have those in the suburbs out here.
It's crazy.
Weird.
So we go up to the window. This is the difference between Chicago and Tennessee. And the woman at the window goes, we got some hot and ready ones coming up here in about 5 minutes. And she said, y'all mind waiting about 5 minutes? And I looked at Mom, and she's like, no, I don't mind. And I said, that's okay. Do you want me to pull up around the corner here in this little parking space? And she went, oh, no, baby, you just sit right there. Row of cars behind me. No one honks. No one gets upset. Because why?
Because they're all waiting for hot and ready.
We'll get there when we get there, and we'll have us some Krispy Kremes. I was like, I would have a gun in my my head if a Chicago one saw me sitting here. They would not be having it. And yet they're like, no, we're getting this Krispy Kreme. We just sit here and wait for it.
I'm going to go get some Krispy Kremes in about 5 days. I'm going to be in Tennessee, and I'm going to get some Krispy Kremes, and I'm going to call you.
is that your Christmas thing?
Honey, they're hot and ready.
They're hot and ready now. Is that your Christmas thing that you do?
Oh, man, I love some Krispy Kremes. Well, if we're talking about food, my favorite thing is to have Mayfield's ice cream.
Oh,
peppermint stick with hot fudge, and everybody knows it in my family, and so they go and get me a big gallon of peppermint.
Have you tried the snow cream?
No.
Snow cream. Mayfield snow cream ice cream. Can't get it in the north.
I know. You and I both know what Mayfield ice cream is.
I tell you, when I go home to Hilton Head for the year. For the year. Wouldn't that be nice? For the summer when we do that for vacation with my mother. She always picks up the snow cream from the Mayfield. Because you can't buy it up here, and I devour it.
It's so good.
And yet, I never make snow cream out of snow. Ever.
Oh, I used to.
See, the northerners are like, what the fuck are these idiots talking
about? No, I would definitely make
snow and an egg and some flour and sugar and egg and vanilla.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? In the snow.
Yeah, it's like real icy tasting ice cream. You know what I mean? It's the essence of what you say, ice cream. It's iced cream.
And yet, you don't want to use the yellow snow.
No, don't use the yellow snow. That's not the good snow.
You know? Oh, it's so good.
It is good.
Snow cream. I'll have to have snow cream when I'm back home.
Ooh.
And lots of food.
We're just going to eat a lot. I'm going to go do that Krispy Kreme thing, though. Hey, folks. She is Missy Higgins, and she's on with us today. And she's just lovely, an Australian.
Good day, mate.
Good day, mate. And so we're thrilled to have her on the show. And get a little few moments with the Aussie, which how often can a lesbian say that?
Oh, you're gonna go down under. Hey!
Woo!
There were sounds in my head, a little voice is whispering that I should go and this should end. Oh, when I found myself I don't know.
Had a huge career in Australia, but with
two CDs, The Sound of White and On a Clear Night, Missy Higgins finds herself secure in the mainstream of American music. Many fans learned of her enormous talent through her songs being featured on popular TV shows Grey's Anatomy, The Hills, So You Think You Can Dance, just to name a few. And then GLBT audiences found an allegiance with her once she began opening up about her sexuality. But who is this Aussie gal who is taking America by storm? So I'm thrilled to have Missy Higgins on the show. Hey, Missy, how are you?
Hi, good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
We love you. My editor and I, when we got your CD, we started popping a little 30 seconds here, 30 seconds there, saying, you got to pick up this girl. This is a great, great CD.
Thank you.
Tell me, where were you born specifically in Australia?
I was born in Melbourne.
So you're a big city girl.
I am, yeah. It's Melbourne is kind of the music art capital of Australia too, I guess, because it's the coldest place in Australia, so everyone's kind of forced inside to be creative. So I was lucky. I was brought up amongst a whole lot of really great live music.
Well, we can identify that with in Chicago, because it's for the same reason I think the arts are so good here.
Chicago's got a great music scene.
Yeah, but now you're living in California, is it weird to be seen as kind of the new kid on the music block when you've already had such huge success in Australia? I mean, you've won the best female artist at your music awards in Australia more than once.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really weird. It's more great. It's more just really enjoyable. I really like being the new kid on the block and being someone who has to start from the bottom again, you know, and it's a challenge and it's really rewarding because every little step of the way is a little achievement in itself. So being a small fish in a big pond like I am in LA, it's really good because I'm surrounded by a whole lot of totally amazing, talented musicians that humble me and kind of challenge me to be better at what I do.
And
it's great being kind of anonymous as well.
Yeah, you have your anonymity there. So talk to me about who these early music influences were in Australia and growing up.
There's a band called The Waits, who I was very influenced by. They're kind of Australian folk, and they had a really big live following. They basically kind of toured Australia for about 10 years in a combi van and have these amazing, folky, beautiful songs with really, really great lyrics that kind of describe the Australian landscape and just the kind of the traveling musician's way of life. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I could really relate to them. And so I think they, amongst a lot of other musicians, kind of helped me develop my sound. I was really into Sarah McLachlan when I first started writing songs as well, mm-hmm. when I was about 15. I had her album Surfacing. And I was also into a lot of the old kind of jazz divas, you know, like Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan and Natalie Cole, who's more recent. I was really into her because I used to sing a lot of jazz with my brother's band. And, that helped me develop my sound, I think. A whole lot of different influences.
Now, you were discovered, quote-unquote, in a very unusual way through a contest. Can you tell us briefly how that happened? Because that really encourages people to put their neck out if they think they have something to show.
Yeah, it was actually a songwriting competition that was put on by a radio station in Australia called Triple J, and the contest was called Unearthed. They still do it. It's a yearly thing. They go around Australia and they get people from each city to send in their own composition on tape, and the best one wins Unearthed, and the prize is to get to play in a big concert and get your song on the radio for a couple of months. So that's pretty much, my sister entered me in that competition when I was in my final year of high school. So I think I was 17 at the time, and it ended up winning, and that's how I got my first bit of exposure and ended up signing a record deal because of that.
I think that's an amazing story. I love that. I mean, it's a very American story in a weird way. So it seems
appropriate. Yeah, it wasn't a reality TV show.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So you've spoken about the fact that you dreamed of being a roving musician, singer-songwriter, traveling, you know, traveling across the lands and, you know, some of the, I don't know, I would say putting your neck out there ways in which you entered this competition and how you don't mind starting back at the beginning and building your career, kind of proving yourself here in the States. Do you think those are aspects that are kind of pure Aussie aspects, or what, even though you're becoming maybe a bit more American and living in the States, what part of you is still so Aussie that you can't take the Australia out of a girl?
I don't know. I guess probably the work ethic. I know Australians are pretty good at putting their head down and just and really giving something an honest shot. And I think also kind of quite enjoyed the concept of being the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I really thrive in that position as well. Like coming over here, I really like the idea of kind of starting at the bottom and really having to work your way up, because it feels so much more rewarding, you know, when you finally get there, or if you ever do get there, because you really worked for what you've got and you weren't given it, you know, on a silver platter.
Yeah.
So I guess that's probably the biggest Aussie aspect of me that will be hard to get out.
I find a lot of bravery in your music. I mean, I find that it's extremely vulnerable. And then you'll have a melody with it that's extremely catchy, easy to feel invited into the song. I mean, I'm thinking specifically even of the song Peachy, you know. There's kind of a juxtaposition of the melody and the lyrics. Is that conscious, and is that kind of the dichotomy of Missy?
I do really enjoy that contrast of kind of dark lyrics and a really upbeat, positive melody. Just because I think I just really love a catchy pop tune, and I really love lyrics that make you think twice, or you want to go back and hear the song again and really you know, delve into the psyche of the songwriter and try to understand it better. I don't know. I really love layers to things, and I think the more kind of things you have, or juxtapositions in a song that you have that make the person you know, want to hear it again, or just, I don't know, feel as though there's many layers to that song, then the better the song is for me. If it's not a one-listen kind of song.
No. Yours definitely are not. Well, you're talking about the layers. One of the things that obviously our listeners would be interested in is that you have been open about your sexuality. I guess initially there was, you weren't, I've heard or I've read, but as soon as I started really, you started coming into my consciousness, I knew that you were fairly open about it. Was that something that was a conscious decision for you, or did you get pressure from a label or people in America to say, don't hide, change, don't be honest about that stuff?
No, I never really talked too much to my label about kind of being open or closed about my sexuality. My manager was always very supportive about what I wanted to do, and he kind of told me the pros and cons, and you know, one of the obvious cons was what a lot of people think about opening up about your sexuality, and that is that it will override your music, and it will become more of an, it will define you much more than your music will define you. Mm-hmm. And of course the pros are just that you're able to be open about something that's a big part of your life, and that other people can find inspiration and courage to open up themselves. So I decided that the pros much outweighed the cons, especially when it was starting to feel as though I was sounding ashamed of something that I wasn't ashamed of, just because I didn't want to discuss my private life with strangers. And I just realized, well, I don't feel like it's a big deal to me, and it shouldn't be a big deal to anyone else, so I should just come out of it.
Yeah. And do you feel now that you can write with both pronouns in any song with no hesitation?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I still, to be honest, I still really like the idea of people being able to adapt my songs to their own situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I'll still probably be quite ambiguous in my songs. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's another layer, right? It's another layer, as you
another
talk
layer, about. Yeah. It can't do any harm, can it?
How has television affected your career? Because Where I Stood received so much play. Obviously, it's impacted you.
Yeah, I think it's been a really positive thing in my career so far in the States. I mean, it seems to be one of the new ways to get your music out there, and it's just a very modern medium for marketing
yeah.
music, and I don't know, it's worked so far. I mean, So You Think You Can Dance made my song surprisingly more popular all of a sudden. So I don't admit to really know anything about how to market myself. I kind of just leave that up to the record company, but I'm fine with having it on TV shows.
I love So You Think You Can Dance. It's one of my major pleasures of the summer, I have to tell you. So I was
yeah, it's pretty popular. I've actually never watched it, but I had a lot of people come up to me and say that they saw it.
Well,
and I wouldn't have taken them as those kind of people to watch,
yeah.
Dance.
Well, they're incredibly talented, it takes such
yeah,
skill
right.
to be that good of a dancer. So when you pair it with fantastic song choices, it's really amazing. You should catch it this season. I encourage you to.
Well, my mom's really into it, and so is my sister. So I think I'll probably have to get into it sooner or later. It's inevitable.
Is there a show that you would want to write for that you haven't?
A show that I would want to write for?
Yeah, is there a show that you love and you're like, I would love to? I mean, there have been some television shows here in the States where a musician has kind of paired themselves, with setting a tone as almost a character in a show.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite show is finished. It was 6 Feet Under.
Mm.
And I just used to love that show, and I would have loved to have written something for that. All those HBO series, I think, are just amazing.
Yeah.
But it probably works better for shows to kind of take the songs that I already have, because I don't have too much experience actually writing for shows or for movies.
I don't know. See, I see you writing a great American folk musical. I see it in your future. You might be writing for the theater.
A folk musical.
I do.
Yeah,
we should talk.
Nice.
I see you doing this. You know, Dolly Parton's writing for Broadway. Everybody's writing for Broadway. I see you writing some sort
really?
Of. I do. I think you're very evocative.
I grew up on Broadway musicals. My family used to take us to musicals all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of had a bit of a dream when I was younger to actually star in my own musical one day, but I think that's a while off yet, if that ever happens. That'll
it
be
could happen. I think your childhood dreams could come true. Who are you listening to now?
Who am I listening to now? Fleet Foxes. God, I can't. For some reason, whenever I get asked that question, I kind of freeze up and I can never actually remember.
But do you have favorites that you always just have in your iPod or in your car?
Oh, do you know who I am listening to at the moment? Do you know Leona Ness?
Uh-huh.
She's really great. She was actually opening up for Ray LaMontagne recently, so we went and saw her live. She was great. And a band called the Avett Brothers, who I'm really enjoying. I don't know, who I always have my iPod. I really, really love the Fleet Foxes album, and I have been enjoying a bit of Coldplay. I love Coldplay.
Mm-hmm. You're saying Fleet
really
Foxes? I don't know them. Fleet Foxes.
Fleet Foxes. Oh, you should check out that album. It's amazing.
I'll have to listen to her. So what is next? I mean, you're constantly touring. Are you working on a new CD? I hear that you write on the road.
Yeah, I do, but I don't think new CD is going to be out for a while. I'm kind of taking a bit of a break from the songwriting thing, and I'm going to take a bit of a break after the album, I think, and just do some fun non-touring things. I mean, I love touring, but it's kind of been what I've been doing for the past 5 years non-stop. So I think I need to do something else for a while just so I have something to write about other than hotel rooms and highways.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I can't say when the next one's going to be out. I do have some songs, but not enough.
Not yet. Well, life will generate your art, I am sure. So taking some time off. Are you heading to Australia for the holidays?